Episode 90 of the TV Dudes, recorded July 14th, 2016.
Demon.
Snummies.
If people play this episode backwards, it opens a portal to hell.
Yeah. So I think Demons backwards is Snummies. So if anyone else wants to take and flip that audio, you're in for a surprise. Or not. We kind of told you, actually. It's straightforward.
Well, do it standing on tinfoil. You're in for an extra surprise.
Hey. Yeah.
We're not going to spoil that one for you. Just get you a big sheet of tinfoil, stand on it, play backwards.
Hey, folks. This week we're talking about casual. We're talking. I got that one right.
You got it right.
I keep saying catastrophe with that one.
Yeah, Grant has a mental block with catastrophe casual. The thing is, catastrophe casual togetherness. Really, arguably, you're the worst. They're all the same show.
All the same show.
And I love all of them, but they're arguably the same show.
We're gonna be talking about casual. We're gonna be talking about Outcast. Hence the name Demons. Well, Demons applies to all of them.
Like personal demons.
Oh yeah. See. And we're gonna be talking about The Night Of over on HBO. But we have a special guest again this week, guys.
What?
Yeah.
What? It's
you. You're the special guest, Kyle.
What? I'm special?
Kyle Scott has joined us. Hey, buddy. How you doing?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me, guys. This is so exciting.
World-renowned graphic designer.
Oh, man. Definitely with
videographer.
Farmers.
Just all-around artistic talent galore is here joining us.
Ah, you're too kind.
A bunch of awards recently for all of your designing.
Yeah, well, I usually clean up pretty well, like on the local level. Although I just moved to Austin this last year, so
yeah.
I'm never to see here. But no, I got my first national award. We actually beat John Deere.
Take that, John Deere.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, I work for an agriculture company. So I do art, design, video, all that fun stuff. I just do it for farmers.
So what are the Emmys of those awards? What are they called?
Well, there's two. The one that I won from is called the NAMA Awards, National Agri-Marketers Awards.
Like it, yep. Do they call this the NAMIs?
The NAMIs?
I think they should.
The NAMAs.
I think I had an aunt NAMI. no, but the advertising awards, those are called the Addies. And call them the Addies.
Yes.
I've won a few local Addies before, but never a national Addy before.
So, you know, the Addies, they've done it like... Mad Men and all, they went to the Addies, right? My brother-in-law actually works in graphic design as well, so he may have been shooting daggers at you at one of these events.
Perhaps. It does get pretty competitive, not just with like other companies, but I've worked at places where people in the same company are like fighting over who gets the entry fee for their project, because you only enter, it's really expensive to enter in these different contests. If you don't think you're going to win, it's kind of a waste of money.
Yeah.
Your brother-in-law, his last name's Deere, right?
John Deere, do you know him?
I've gotten letter from that guy before.
Hey, folks, we're the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
And as we already mentioned...
I am Kyle.
And we're going to be talking about all those shows, but before we get into that, we have some other house cleaning, I guess, to do. First up, iTunes. We don't have any iTunes shout-outs this week, but that's not stopping you listeners from going right now over to the iTunes store, looking up the TV Dudes, and giving us a 5-star rating and writing us a little review. We'll read that here on the show. You don't have to write a review. I mean, it still helps us to have a 5-star rating, but you can write pretty much anything you want. As long as you give us those 5 stars, that helps us like gain more visibility on iTunes. It just helps the audience kind of grow, so more people listen to the show.
Dare us to read your review on the air.
Yeah, dare us. We've gotten some crazy ones lately. And then moving over to patreon.com/TV Dudes. This is where you guys could financially support the show. If you enjoy what we are doing, we would love for your financial support. Think about giving us $1 an episode. I think that's a great amount. That can be anywhere from $3 to $5 a month. You're maybe buying us a beer or a lovely ginger ale for Randy or whatever you drink.
I drink girly drinks, man.
Okay,
apple martini, yeah. How about
nothing wrong with those. I know tons of girls who like them.
Something tropical with fruit in it, man. That's all I want.
It's all fair. You can buy us one of those, but yeah, $1 an episode. And In exchange, you're not just supporting the site, you're also getting exclusive bonus content. Each week, we record about a half hour discussing other pop culture stuff that kind of interests us, but that doesn't fit within the dome of TV-centric discussion. This week, I believe we're actually going to be talking about Pokemon Go.
Pokemon!
So definitely go check that out, because there's a craze going on, folks. And we have one patron that we would like to thank this week. Thank you so much for joining us, John Higley. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. We actually want to thank all our patrons, but we want to thank our new patron by name.
We would, yes, our new one by name. Yes. Let's move on to our listener questions. If you'd like us on Facebook or on Twitter, you guys can follow along and we ask questions once a week right before our episode. First question today comes from Michael Gassini. He says, ahoy, TV dudes.
Ahoy.
So I finally finished watching Daredevil Season 2, and though I dug the hell out of it, it didn't quite reach the greatness of Season 1 for me. The reason for this? Wilson Fisk. He was such an important part of what I liked the first season, and his reduced presence in Season 2 was noticeably jarring. And my favorite Season 2 episode was the only one he appeared in significantly. Can you think of any other examples of shows that were handicapped by a particularly great character's absence? And do you think Jessica Jones will suffer without Kilgrave as a character? As always, thanks for the great content.
Two thoughts first.
Okay.
One, I totally agree about Wilson Fisk. I think that Daredevil missed Wilson Fisk in that second season. Two, how different would Daredevil have been if it had been Wilson Phillips?
Wait, who's Wilson Phillips?
They're the singing group from the 80s.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, the song of the end of Bridesmaids? That was them.
Yeah. I that would be terrible.
It'd be a very different show.
That they sing and his ears, I can't handle the noise.
See, that's Daredevil's natural enemy, bad music. I'm sorry to all you Wilson Phillips fans out there. There's no Wilson Phillips fans listening to this podcast.
Wilson Phillips himself was just like, I'm done with you.
And the other thing, the Kilgrave question, before we get to the other part of the question, I actually think Jessica Jones is going to be better off, because I think that one of the issues Jessica Jones had was that it was actually too much Kilgrave. I feel like a side plot would have really helped that show.
That show should have been 8 episodes, 6 episodes even, maybe. I mean, it just should have been so much shorter. They had a lot of extra padding because they were just repeating things.
I would have done what they did in the comics, which is Kilgrave doesn't show up really till the fourth arc. There were 3 arcs before that that were different stories, and I think that building Jessica up as this PI before you get into the Kilgrave stuff.
Oh, that would have been so good.
And wondering, like, why is she so fucked up? Like, that was what made the comic really good. And
it had to be kind of like Terriers, but with Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know?
What if Hank Dolworth and Britt Pollock were actually in? What if instead of Jessica Jones, it was Hank Dolworth and Britt Pollock? What if instead of New York, it was out in Ocean Beach?
Yeah.
What if instead of Kilgrave, it was Lindis and the evil real estate developers? What if it was Terrier Season 2, I guess is what I'm saying.
Randy, this seems as good a time as any to remind everyone of what's going on, what's coming up.
Yeah, Terrier's on my mind lately, not just because it's always on my mind, but because I'm currently recording Beach Cop Detectives, a Terrier's podcast. 3 episodes are in the can. We're finishing production on them. Very happy with how they're turning out, and it should be releasing late summer, early September. We're trying to get a bunch of it done before we start releasing them, but hoping to get Ted Griffin on to talk about it.
Yeah, we'll give him enough cushion. I know he's a busy fella, so we'll
and
see.
Patreon listeners will get it early.
Oh, hey, another incentive. Patreon.com/TV Dudes. What do you think, Kyle? Who do you think leaving a show has handicapped the show?
Well, real quick, I caught that Kingpin number one from the Civil War 2 series.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. It could, obviously, it's just the first issue. It can go in a million directions, but they're kind of setting him up as having, like, in this world where, you know, the superheroes, you know, are already there before you do it. Like, he's the one guy who may have a weapon against these people, kind of setting himself up to really run the show. But
so you're just giving a sideways shout out to Kingpin.
Well, that's what we're talking about, right? Wilson Fisk character?
No, we're talking about shows that have lost their main character.
Ah.
But I want to agree with your shout out, by the way, because it's a great series by Matthew Rosenberg, and they're going to do an ongoing afterwards, so it's really good.
Yeah.
So comics there.
But
back to TV.
I mean, you were mentioning off mic about The Office.
Easy example right there. After Steve Carell left the show, I mean, I still watched till the end. I think a lot of people did, but obviously it didn't have the same magic. Some people said it was probably kind of waning a little bit, you know, by the time he left too, but definitely was not the same show after he was gone.
Yeah, it just became this sad sort of jockeying for who could kind of fill the void that he left, and no one could.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, Craig Robinson, I still think, could have carried it if they'd given his character a little more to do, but he was the only one who had a shot at it.
Yeah. Ed Helms was terrible. Ed Helms was terrible.
What's her name? Donna Noble from Doctor Who was terrible. Catherine Tate, she was terrible. Yeah.
You know what? If Ricky Gervais came in and actually did
that, that would have been amazing.
That would have been brilliant. Yeah.
But James Spader couldn't even do it. Like, James Spader was boring as shit on that show.
Yeah. And it's weird when he's boring.
Yeah, it shouldn't have been as bad.
But he's so dry. He's so dry in his comedy, and it's a different thing than what The Office was doing.
That's true, actually.
You know, Will Ferrell's kind of hit or miss, but I would have really liked to see him just kind of go over the top with that character. He would have made it his own thing, but
even Will Ferrell in The Office, I didn't think it was like his strongest performance.
Oh no, agreed there. But I do think, especially when you see some of the stuff he does on Funny or Die, if you had him take some of those sensibilities into that show and then kind of, you know, develop it even further beyond what they were doing, that'd be good.
I think they should have Toby take front and center. No, nobody thinks that.
So another one that just kind of wrecked a show in a way was Donald Glover.
Donald Glover leaving Community, man.
Him leaving Community?
You know, the weird thing about that was like the slow leak in the boat. You're like, oh, the boat's still sailing fine. We're going good. Hey, where's all this water coming from? Because that's what it was. Like, I didn't realize how much I missed him until we were well into the show when he was gone. I'm like, oh, this show is really missing that sort of heart at its core. And Donald Glover was definitely that.
Yeah.
I love that boat analogy. Good shout out to his last scene, riding away on the boat.
That was totally accidental.
Sure. We have this whole episode scripted out before we record.
That's not your next line. Hold on, go back.
I make a lot of nautical references. So it's kind of my thing.
Yeah, you love the sea.
Yes.
All right, well, let's move on to another question. This next one comes from Daniel Wallace, who says, hey, dudes, bit of a different question. What phrases or mannerisms have you noticed that you picked up from TV? Personally, I will say, hooray, a task from Todd on BoJack Horseman. Anytime I get a fairly boring assignment.
Okay, I remembered one. We were talking about this off mic a little bit. The one that I'm always doing with my friend Dave at the store is from The Simpsons, from their Halloween episode. Whenever something goes bad, you do, oh, good, the curtains are on fire, which is from The Simpsons. And it's like a reference that we do so often that occasionally people will stare at us like, what are you talking about? And we're like, oh, that's a thing. When we say that, it means this is going badly and we're trying to put a happy face on it.
Yeah, I know I do a ton from The Simpsons, but I can't think of which one. It's like in the moment, it just automatically triggers. It's like, oh, this is time for a Simpsons quote. But I can't think of necessarily.
Well, you're always telling me to eat your shorts, which I feel is rude, by the way.
Oh, they do that in The Simpsons? I literally want you to eat my shorts. That's a fetish of mine. Oh, God. This took a turn.
Yeah, patrons, if you give us a little more money, Grant will never say anything like that ever again.
Asterisk, Grant makes no guarantees.
The one that I keep thinking, I was mentioning this one too before we were on mic, is that when someone does something like Kyle revealed to us that he was Team Valor and not Team Mystic in Pokemon Go, and I said, God damn it, Kyle. And I don't remember where that comes from. I swear that's from a TV show. We think maybe it's from South Park.
They do have a Kyle there.
But if anyone knows that sort of that phrasing, that God damn it, whatever your name is, where that comes from, tell us in the comments, because it's driving me crazy and I feel like I picked it up from a TV show.
I can't
believe
I don't remember it, because I feel like anybody who's ever seen that show and meets me has to say that line to me. They just feel so clever.
I always say I've made a huge mistake when I make a mistake. That's Job, Arrested Development.
Yep.
It's always comedy ones. Comedy has the catchphrases. Yeah, I guess that's their bread and butter.
This one's kind of dated, but I remember the Tick cartoon.
Oh,
I was saying spoon quite a bit afterwards. It's just a good, you know, filler phrase. You know,
now that you mentioned that, though, drama-wise, I'm sure there's some stuff from Breaking Bad that gets brought up. Like Science Bitch.
Time to cook.
Time to cook.
Yeah.
Say My Name.
Or, aw, man, again. Or,
what?
I'm sure at one point they say something like that.
Yes.
It's just, I say that. Aw, man, again. That's our new TV Dudes catchphrase.
Aw, man, again.
Aw, man, again.
That's how we're going to open every show.
It's such a terrible one. We'll work on that.
We'll workshop it. Do like mouth the bass line from Seinfeld, you know, whenever something kooky hit. Boot, boot, boot.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or doot, wah, 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 wah.
Yeah, well, and you usually enter a room like Kramer.
That's a mannerism. That's perfect.
Guys.
All right, let's move on to our next... another question from Real Rob Fan Club.
Oh, boy.
These are always great ones for you.
These are great.
This is Randy's personal troll, I think. It says, greetings, almighty lovers of the Schneider. That's Rob Schneider, by the way, folks. I have a question. An actual non-Real Rob-related question. Rejoice. I've loved all of the choices made by the Preacher series so far and thought they had all been respectful and mindful of the source material as well. But then this most recent episode had a reveal about a certain butt-mouthed individual.
Who could that be?
And I'm not sure how I feel about this change. It seems to ruin potential in having audience investment in the character further on. Simply put, has Preacher ruined Arseface with his new origin? I'm still loving the show, just not sure about this choice.
First of all, simpatico on Real Rob, obviously. Can't wait for season two.
Mm-hmm.
We're also simpatico on this Preacher thing because, yeah, what the fuck? I don't want to go too into spoilers, but what the fuck was that? Because you can't have him direct that outward and not inward and have him be this loving, this great sort of wide-eyed character anymore. He was a fucking trench coat mafia dude. You can't do that.
Well, I would assume they know that he fired two shots, right? It couldn't have been that he just tried to kill himself and accidentally hit her.
See, that's
part of it.
That's what I assumed was going to be the reveal. Like, he had tried to kill himself and he hit the girl with part of it. And I'm like, that's fine. That's in line with it. But if he actually went all MRA and got rejected by a girl and went and shot her in the face and then tried to kill himself. Fuck that guy.
MRA,
men's rights activist. Yeah.
Oh boy. Yeah.
But then it doesn't really make sense why he has such a sunny disposition.
Yeah. Now. Right.
Yeah, I thought maybe it was Preacher just kind of trying to rationalize, and he took what maybe he thought was what he had as hearsay about the situation,
maybe.
And he repeated it.
Maybe
that's not how it went down.
I hope not, because, yeah, I think that's a fuck-up you can't walk back. The other thing is, I think they kind of fucked up Jesse and his dad in this episode. Like, you can't reveal that Jesse worshipped his dad in the comics, and that was a really important thing, and mm-hmm. his dad was one of these always-right kind of dudes, and to make him sort of this more nuanced character, it works for TV, but it really ruins the relationship they had.
They compromised his relationship with his dad. They compromised Arseface. And they sort of compromised Jesse and his self-righteousness, even if it wasn't, like, morally righteous.
Well,
because I feel like what was the right thing to do and what Jesse Custer, who is, like, in the comic, he at least has his own personal drive for what he feels is right.
Right.
Would be to try and make amends for what happened with Arseface.
Yeah.
Like, he wouldn't have done that and been okay with it.
And just pretended it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Well, that's the other thing. We're going on a tangent here.
It was about a show that we were not going to talk about.
It was such a great moment at the end of last episode that I think you and I, Grant, both sort of were like, oh, maybe we're more on board for this all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
And then this whole episode was more of that treading water. Like, get back to the story I want to see.
Treading water and, like, jeopardizing parts that were working well.
So I still really like the show, but it is uneven, and they need to get things back on track.
Mm-hmm. I hope we didn't kind of ruin anything there with that discussion. All right, here's another question. This one comes from Kyle Volte, who says, "Hey, TV dudes, thanks for taking time away from hunting Pokemon." Oh, he must know what our Patreon discussion is to answer our question today. So, without much more ado, are there any classic shows that you wish there was a modern equivalent of today? Personally, I'd love to see something in the vein of, say, Simon and Simon, or perhaps Remington Steele with a modern update.
Yeah, I'm with him on that. I think the sort of fun, lighthearted West Coast adventure detective stuff is a whole missing. I'm not just talking about terriers.
You are always talking about terriers.
I am talking about terriers, but
Simon terriers is basically a Simon and Simon update.
That's
with
true.
A better spin.
So we should have more of that. But like things like that, like the Fall Guy and sort of high concept stuff. None of it was very good at the time, but the notion of a stuntman who on the side of a detective is kind of a fun idea. The notion of brothers who run a detective agency, the other one he mentioned besides Simon and Simon was Remington Steele. Remington Steele is such a great idea because you could definitely update it in modern days, because the whole point was that the detective was the woman and she had to have this Bond-esque guy to front her because nobody would take a woman seriously as a PI. Mm. You flip that. You look at that today, in today, where it's still there, but it's definitely a different kind of take.
Yeah.
I think you could really have some interesting things to say about gender politics along with a fun detective show.
Yeah.
What say you?
Oh, man, this can be an awful answer, but I would love like a seriously done modern version of Fantasy Island, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Talking about like great locations, but then like make it like a real drama, like have like, you know, some drama of all these people out on this. A
little more Twilight Zone-ish?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. More or less. I sometimes just watch TV because it's like, oh, I wish I could vacation there. Never going to be able to afford that. Let's turn it on for 30 minutes.
MacGyver. Man, what if they did an update of MacGyver?
Talking
Randy?
To you, Grant.
What about that?
That sounds like an awesome idea.
So, yeah, stay tuned. I'm pretty sure MacGyver's coming. Did it get canceled, actually?
I don't remember.
I heard... maybe I'm wrong, but I want to say they did an episode and they're like, this ain't gonna work. So then they did a second pilot.
Yeah, and it's like all completely new. That's right. I think it is. But it's still like going direct to series or something. But that does raise an actual serious answer, which is that Star Trek's coming back. And I feel like one thing that they're missing in TV right now is like legit like sci-fi set in space. Ooh. We've got The Expanse, which is sort of in that vein, but like starfaring,
Killjoys,
starships. Killjoys is different. Killjoys.
Did you guys see that Yahoo series?
Other Space?
Other Space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved Other
that
Space.
That was great.
But like a like Babylon 5, Star Trek, like a serious sci-fi out in space kind of show.
That's what Killjoys is, I think.
No, Killjoys is just kind of an adventure series, a bounty hunter series with space as a backdrop.
Okay.
I don't know. Expanse is a little bit like what I'm talking about, but Star Trek sort of is a beast of its own, and I'm kind of glad to see it back, but... remember, we used to have Battlestar Galactica and Space Above and Beyond, a bunch of things and like that, and I'd kind of like to see someone like that again.
Oh, yeah. I would love the classic Terriers brought back.
I also think Terriers Season 2.
All right, we're taking a break.
All right, so there's some news this week. We're going to close out with the Emmy nods.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We got some questions on that I didn't get to.
You guys will be shocked that I don't feel like they're bullshit this year.
Wow.
That's
bold.
It's very surprising. But we're going to get to that last because there's some other really exciting news. For one thing, this is super exciting to me and Grant especially. Fargo Season 3. I love Fargo. It's my favorite show. Cast someone from Grant's favorite show, The Leftovers.
Oh,
Carrie Coon as female lead in Season 3. Hell yeah.
I love that.
I love Carrie Coon.
She is fantastic.
She's amazing.
I wonder how she could do the accent.
Yeah, the Fargo accent?
Yeah. I can't do the accent.
I'm sure
know?
She can handle it. Yeah. I'm sure she can handle it. But
she'll be fine. It's like in a way we're getting married, Randy. Or our favorite shows are fusing.
Don't make this weird, Grant.
Okay.
It's like two houses coming together, united by marriage.
That's less weird. That's less weird.
Fine. We'll let him phrase it.
All right. Fox has ordered a new X-Men Marvel pilot from Bryan Singer and Simon Kinberg, which that's impressive enough. That's the movie team. But the producer, the showrunner is Matt Nix from Burn Notice, who is also going to write the pilot.
And isn't this one in cahoots with Marvel?
Yes.
Like, that's also pretty notable.
Yes. Marvel and Fox put out a statement that Jeff Loeb, the head of Marvel TV, like said some really nice things about it. So, yeah, he said they're thrilled to be co-producing with 20th Century Fox on our first project. This is a good... this is an unfreezing of relations, folks. We could get our Fantastic Four back. We could get the X-Men characters crossing over the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This could be... the Berlin Wall coming down.
Do you think it's possible they already have that in the works? They have Fantastic Four worked in for the Infinity Gems thing, and that would be the introduction of those characters?
No, but it wouldn't shock me. I don't think that's where they're at.
I wonder if they would write two scripts and be like, you know what?
in the event we can broker this deal, let's have one where we have the Fantastic Four and another one where we don't.
It would suck to be the guy charged with writing the Fantastic Four version, or the version that doesn't get made, I guess.
Yeah.
Then you're like, I'm writing a Marvel movie. You show up.
You know what?
Oh, they cut it out.
You still get paid.
That's true. You still get paid.
I think that's completely within the realm of possibility. There's two scripts for it, because that seems like the kind of thing they do.
This is a silly question. This is going to be live action?
Live action show.
Oh, man.
And so the concept of this one, this is a good concept, follows two ordinary parents who discover their children are mutants. Under an increasing threat from mutant hospital government agencies, they go on the run into the underground world of mutants while they fight to stay together and survive. So it's going to be in the X-Men universe, but it's not going to be about the X-Men.
It's going
to be about a family. And see, I read that description and I hear Morlocks, because I want to see the Morlocks, and we're never going to see them on the big screen. But like the underground community, I think that'd be super cool. And then seeing them being torn between, you know, Magneto's Brotherhood and Xavier's X-Men and that kind of thing. I think this kind of thing could be really, really good. So I'm excited. I'm excited by this. And I think Matt Nix, who did a great job on Burn Notice, is a guy who could really make this work.
And that alongside Noah Hawley working on Legion for FX.
Yeah.
I mean, Noah Hawley, who's the guy who's doing Fargo, the show we love.
Yes.
Him doing another X-Men-related show. I'm a lot more excited about where they're going in the direction. And Marvel and Fox are working together.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's huge.
The only downside here is that Hellfire, the one that was about the Hellfire Club, lost its showrunners. It's been officially cleared dead. And that's really not a bad thing.
Hey, I got a great Hellfire in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., right? Wasn't that Hellfire?
No, it wasn't Hellfire.
What was his name?
What are you talking about?
The Australian dude.
Oh, no, Hellfire Club, the X-Men bad guys.
Oh, but that dude's name was Hellfire, right?
It probably was.
The Australian dude?
I don't know.
It was terrible.
I don't remember anything that happens at Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But I turned it off.
Remember.
No, why would you do that to me?
Suffer. Suffer with the rest of us.
I turn it off and I think, wow, I know that show sucked, but I don't remember why.
All right, well,
and then
I tune back in the next week to watch it again, because I'm stupid.
Yeah,
all right. Netflix has ordered a marijuana comedy series starring Kathy Bates. And yes, it's got Chuck Lorre at the helm.
Oh, no. What? I'm out.
So you know how there's two Netflixes, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know there's Netflix that makes like Master of None.
Yeah.
And then there's the Netflix that makes that awful comedy.
With Ashton Kutcher.
With Ashton Kutcher. Or Real Rob. Or...
Wait, I thought you liked Real Rob.
For the purposes of this joke, no. Fuller House. The Evil Netflix, I like to think of it.
Yeah.
Well, this is from Evil Netflix.
I'm kind of on board with Fuller House. Ain't gonna lie. A little bit.
Evil Kyle likes it.
Evil Kyle watches that one.
It's a stoner comedy based on an LA cannabis dispensary. Kathy Bates is the lead role as a store owner, managing a group of constantly high employees, including her son and a slightly disabled security guard. I don't think there's any way they could make this sound less for me.
Chuck Lorre, man.
Right.
I don't know.
I thought you said Hugh Lorre at first. And
oh,
then
damn.
I was like, what?
Yeah, I'd be on board for that.
Yeah, Hugh Lorre, sure. Hugh Lorre and Kathy Bates, that's great. Chuck Lorre and Kathy Bates, not so much.
Wrong Lorre.
All right, gents. Shall we talk Emmys?
Yeah, you didn't want to mention the other little thing?
A little bit of news?
The Flash?
Oh, I thought we were going to leave that out. But
oh, we can leave it out.
Let me just say this. The Kid Flash costume looks pretty badass.
Looks pretty sweet. That's all we have to say.
That's pretty fine. Dead on. All right.
Fine.
So those who've been listening for a while will know that my general stance on the Emmys and all awards is that they're bullshit.
Yeah, you say that loud and proud and repeatedly.
The Emmys got almost everything right this year.
It's pretty impressive. Mainly because they included the Americans. And they always forget about the Americans.
Yeah, the Americans got in. Well, not only what did get in, but what didn't get in. The Americans gets in here. Big Bang Theory is nowhere to be found. And I think that Game of Thrones is still in. And their comedies, they got all the HBO comedies. They got Silicon Valley. They got Veep. There are like minor issues I have with it. But in general, this was a great year for Emmys. There was no love for Daredevil or Jessica Jones, which kind of surprises me.
It's not. I always think it's pulpy. That's pulpy fun.
Yeah.
I never look at a Daredevil episode or a Jessica Jones episode and go, ooh, that's high art. That's, you didn't they're, think, they're, that's fantastic storytelling.
You didn't think Jessica Jones was great TV, though? Like great TV? Like, I'm not surprised.
No, I like Daredevil more than Jessica Jones.
Oh, okay. I'm not surprised that Flash isn't here. I mean, I love Flash.
Oh, my God,
I love The Flash. The Flash is not an Emmy show. But Daredevil or Jessica Jones are different. They're on a different plane, I think. But I didn't just say I think
that's
the Flash
like the
belongs
biggest
here.
No duh of, well, of ever.
No, what I'm trying to say is by comparison, I understand
why Vampire Diaries just didn't make the cut.
Why didn't Vampire Diaries make the cut?
They're the same as the Flash in quality.
I understand that there's some shows that are not Emmy caliber.
Okay.
And I understand that superhero shows by their nature are not Emmy caliber. But I thought Daredevil and Jessica Jones sort of rose above their genre a little bit.
I like them. They're really good.
I don't know. I'm not shocked they're not here, but I'm a little surprised that one of them didn't break through.
Well, okay, let's run through a few of these, because I think it is pretty interesting to look at. Outstanding drama. We have great. What category. We got?
Better Call Saul, Game of Thrones, Mr. Robot, The Americans are the ones I think belong there. And then the ones that shouldn't are Downton Abbey, Homeland, and House of Cards.
Downton Abbey should probably be on there, so...
Oh yeah, I'm kind
of
House of Cards.
Big Downton Abbey fan.
Really?
Yeah, big time.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Downton Abbey should be on there.
It's my guilty pleasure.
I get that. House of Cards was kind of awesome this season.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. I haven't watched it.
I thought it made a comeback this season.
Yeah. Okay. I haven't watched it.
You didn't like it
so
as much?
I don't know. I kind of fell off, and then this season it didn't really pull me back.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought as soon as they had the assassination attempt, everything ramped back up, and I was like, okay. Now I'm on board.
So
this
wait,
again.
Wait. Is House of Cards less pulpy than Daredevil? Because House of Cards is pretty damn pulpy.
If you put a political sheen over everything rather than a comic
if
book
you make
superpower
your
sheen,
feel smart.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's
all
less
right.
pulpy.
Okay.
But no, I have kind of a my problem with that show is Claire Underwood. Like as soon as that character came to the wait, we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't get on board with like the super Claire where she's like a big political player.
I thought it made a lot more sense than when they put her in the position of power and should have had all the other mechanisms there for her to do well, and then they just kind of threw her under the bus and made her like terrible at her job. I'm like, that doesn't make sense with everything else they set up, like her background and like how manipulative she is, how she knows to play all these games. So it just seemed weird that they did that only to kind of have this redemption. The redemption I thought made a lot more sense. So I don't know. I really liked it.
There were no big snubs here. I was kind of surprised, but I do think, there's what, seven shows? Is that standard?
I thought it used to be five and then they went up to 10 for a bit. No, that's Oscars. It went to 10.
Yeah,
I guess.
Cause what is Homeland doing here?
I don't know.
What is Homeland doing here?
Because Claire Danes probably always puts in a fantastic performance, and so they can't just stop thinking about
sure,
her.
Sure, but Claire Danes gets her nod.
Carrie Russell gets her nod, and that's a long time coming.
Yeah, that's a long time coming. That's what I'm saying, though, is that if you look at the list of shows, the lead actress, which is the next category, Tatiana Maslany.
Awesome.
Viola Davis, Taraji P. Henson.
Awesome.
All good actresses. None of their shows are nominated.
So
why does Claire Danes' show get nominated?
I mean, it's hard for me to speak about it because I dropped off Homeland.
You think it's possible it became great again?
No.
Neither do I. I mean, honestly, I think Empire probably belongs in that spot more than Homeland does.
Yeah.
But anyway, the Outstanding Lead Actress category, though, in addition to the ones I just listed, has Keri Russell, Claire Danes, and Robin Wright. And I like all those people. I know Kyle is not a big fan of... But you like Robin Wright, the performance, right?
I definitely loved her in the first two seasons, but there was just a point of like where I couldn't suspend my disbelief. Like, yeah, she plays the game perfect on that show, but for me, I never saw what really made her qualified outside of being Frank's wife for a lot of the responsibilities that they gave her and a lot of the trust that they put into her.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
I
hate to be.
Yeah,
I know.
but we can leave that conversation for a different
I wish
hole.
I did agree with you. I hate being the odd man out.
We should talk about House of Cards at some point. I should watch more than season two.
Oh, we went off on it at the end of the season.
That's where I left the room because I hadn't
watched. Yeah, you left.
All right. Outstanding Lead Actor. This was another interesting one because Rami Malek, Bob Odenkirk, Matthew Rhys are all in here, and Kevin Spacey are all in here for shows that were on there. And by the way, Matthew Rhys, long overdue.
Mm.
Just like Keri Russell, long overdue.
Anything Americans,
Yeah, I'm glad that Rami Malek got the nod too, because he was great in Mr. Robot.
I feel like Mad Men's finally gone, and now they're like, oh, I guess we can kind of pay attention to this other show that's been here this entire time.
That's actually true. And Kevin Spacey, of course, no surprise, he gets the nod. But Kyle Chandler for Bloodline, which I believe should actually be called Best Actor in a Show Nobody's Watching Because It's Boring.
A lot of people seem to love it that do watch it.
A lot of people watch Real Rob.
Okay, fair enough.
No, actually,
a lot of people watch Fuller House.
That's mean, because I actually watched the first half. I watched the first half of Bloodline. It's fine. I don't know that I need to see any more seasons of it.
I just felt that Kyle Chandler's playing Kyle Chandler.
Yeah. I mean, Kyle Chandler probably belongs here. He's great. He's always great. And then Liv Schreiber for Ray Donovan? What?
Yeah, he's brooding and he doesn't say anything.
I haven't seen that show yet, but my roommate looked pretty into it when I left the house today. He was marathoning it.
I know Greg liked it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I was surprised by that one. All right. Supporting actress. I was ready to go off on the lead actress category, and then I saw the supporting actress. I'm like, oh, everybody I thought would be lead is in here. So Game of Thrones rules this category, because there's Lena Headey, there's Emilia Clarke, there's Maisie Williams, and Maggie Smith's in there for Downton Abbey, but I like to think she's in there for playing Tyrell in... isn't it Maggie Smith?
No.
Who is it? Oh, it's Diana Rigg.
Yeah, she's
That's
great.
That's right.
Yeah.
All old British ladies look alike to me.
she's from Harry Potter.
Oh, right. Okay.
McGonagall.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that lady.
They're all British ladies of the same.
And then Maura Tierney from The Affair and Constance Zimmer from Unreal.
I've not seen either of those shows, but I hear both of them are great.
Unreal, people are flipping their shit about.
Yeah.
I feel like we need to go and marathon this.
We probably should.
We're two seasons behind, but we can do it.
Sure, why not? I don't have anything else to watch.
Yeah.
all right. Outstanding limited series and TV movie. This is another category I was all set to be pissed. Like, where's all these shows? They're in this category. American Crime, Fargo, The Night Manager, The People vs. O.J. Simpson, American Crime Story. Love all those shows. And Roots, which I heard was great but have not seen.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
But that may be the toughest category this entire year. Like, how do you choose between those shows?
I do. I just go Fargo. Done.
I mean, I want to go Fargo, but I could make a strong argument for People vs. O.J. Simpson or Night Manager.
Yeah, I love Night Manager. That was kind of
Night Manager was fantastic.
My sleeper hit of the year.
I mean, ultimately, yeah, I'd probably go Fargo, but that's a tough call. The other thing was, I think is interesting about this category is that it really shows that that's where TV is going. Limited series, anthology series, TV movie, that kind of thing. I like the idea of shows with endings, like built into them.
Well, let's jump ahead over to the comedy category.
Okay.
So comedy, the shows themselves that got nominated, Black-ish, Master of None, Modern Family, Silicon Valley, Transparent, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and Veep.
Modern Family, GTFO.
Yeah. Which one doesn't belong there?
Yeah. And the thing is, I think Brooklyn Nine-Nine should get that spot. Even if it had a down year, Brooklyn Nine-Nine is better than Modern Family. But you know what's missing? Casual. Which we didn't talk about. Which you can argue Casual doesn't belong in the comedy, but neither does Transparent.
Or You're the Worst. Or
and where the You're the Worst doesn't surprise me. Nobody's watching You're
Broad
the Worst.
Broad City.
And Broad City is the big one. Broad City is a huge snub. And in the lead actress and supporting actress, there's no mention of Abby Jacobs or Alana Glazer. They got completely shut out, which is fucked up.
Hmm. I don't watch the show, so I don't know.
Broad City?
Yeah.
Oh, it's great.
And it
That's
had a,
what I hear.
It had a great year, too. Like, there's not been an off year for Broad City. Broad City was the big snub.
And what other categories do we have that we might want to hit on real quick?
Well, there's the supporting actress and supporting actor for comedy, which are interesting. But I first want to quick mention, Jim Parsons got snubbed in lead actor, and Big Bang Theory got shut out, and that makes me very happy.
What about Rob Schneider? Is he on here?
Not yet. Real Rob was probably not actually available for Emmys this year.
Do they have a best episode category?
I don't know. I think that's just how they judge the who gets in.
I would love to see a category for like a dramatic comedy. You know?
Yeah, because Transparent, Casual, any number of shows don't really fit.
I would even kind of put Louis in that category.
Yeah.
If
Louis ever returns.
Speaking of Louis.
Horace and Pete. Like Horace and Pete, where's that going to go?
Oh, miniseries?
Maybe.
He doesn't have it like released through any network, though. I don't know. He'd have to represent himself completely.
Yeah.
Speaking of Louis, though, Louis Anderson was nominated for Baskets. And if you guys haven't watched this show, Louis Anderson, he's playing, what's his name? Zach Galifianakis'
mom.
Yeah.
And he is fantastic in the role. It's so good.
By the way, did you notice that all the supporting performances, almost all of them, are for people in whose shows did not get nominated?
I guess.
Like, there's a couple. Like, Transparent has two actors, and Veep has an actress. But a lot of these are shows that didn't get nominated.
I mean, all of this is, like, stuff that we like talking about week to week. It's not the shows that we're skipping.
Yeah.
So...
yeah,
we're on the right track, and I think finally everyone else is catching up with us.
Yeah, finally people realize the TV dudes are right and have always been right.
I do see Allison Janney for Mom is on here, and we never talk about the show Mom.
You know what, though? I love Allison Janney, so I can't really say anything about that.
I can. It's a garbage show.
Here's what I'll say. Keegan-Michael Key is nominated for the final season of Key and Peele. Jordan Peele isn't. What up with that?
They got a lot of categories or a lot of
Michael Key is like, is it because his name came first?
Yes,
is probably. It's alphabetical.
He's representing both of them.
Okay.
Plus, if you had to pick which one of them you feel like has the better comedic performance, would you say it was Peele over Key?
I mean, that's like picking between my kids, man. You can't do that.
Sophie's choice. Yeah. What's it gonna be?
I can't pick between Key and Peele.
My argument Keanu would be that Peele. Was it Jordan Peele?
Yeah.
He does a lot of other stuff. So you could say that Jordan, he puts more of it into Key and Peele. He's like more invested. So maybe he deserves it.
Yeah.
Or maybe he's bad at booking other gigs.
He does all the writing in the background, Peele. So maybe he's getting more writing credit.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't know. Right. I'm trying to make you feel better.
I don't know.
Great speculation we're on.
I feel bad for Jordan Peele. That's what I'm saying.
Of course you do. Well, you know what? Let's go ahead and take a quick break. And we're going to come back and talk about how great Jordan Peele is for the rest of the show.
All right, good.
Segment sponsored by Jordan Peele.
So I've not had a chance to talk about Hulu's Casual Season 2, which I really like. And then our good friend Kyle was like, hey, should we talk about Casual? And I was like, hell yeah, let's talk Casual.
Yeah, I got to say, you know, summertime, it's always hard to keep up with your TV. You got vacations, you got fam, people visiting in town, you got all this stuff going on. But for me, honestly, the one show where I was like, if I can only catch one episode of this for the next few days, it's Casual. I jump back on it, Season 2, and yeah, I'm loving it as well.
Yeah, this is the only thing keeping Hulu on for me since they're not going to have CW shows anymore. Casual is what is keeping me on Hulu for an extra month because I want to see where it goes because it's 13 episodes this year. Last year it was 10. So we're still like only a little over halfway through.
True.
And Casual, for those who don't know, Casual is about Valerie who got divorced from her husband after he cheated on her with a younger Asian woman. Her 16 or 17-year-old daughter...
around that
Laura, and then her brother, whose name I'm blanking on, and I have it pulled up in front of me, and I still can't find it.
My favorite character too.
He's sort of the lead character, and it's Alex. Alex is her brother, and she moves in with him back to his house, and they've got this sort of really close relationship, and
kind of oh, how do you best describe it?
Well, it's not Lannister close.
No, but they they do love being miserable with one another.
Yes, like, yes, that's what it is.
They get their most joy from like sharing their misery with each other.
And my favorite supporting character, who doesn't show up all the time, is Leon.
Oh,
who Alex
Leon.
Randomly met early on. He slept with Valerie because Valerie's sort of going out. The reason the show is called Casual is because Alex started a dating site. It was really popular. And Casual is like the relationship category that Valerie was looking for, sort of what Alex is looking for. He's a commitment phobe to some extent. And as we get at the beginning of season two, Alex had this really serious breakup with a girl that he really liked, who was Polly.
Yep.
And Laura had a pretty bad breakup, well, sort of breakup with her photography teacher who she was trying to get to sleep with her.
Which also got her kind of kicked out of school.
Yeah.
So
we get the homeschooling stuff.
Yep.
Which I love what they're doing with the homeschooling
stuff.
Lots of
fun.
Yeah.
I mean, they have this whole bit where they're just taking around to different options for not only public schools and private schools, but then different homeschooling options. Stuff I'd never even heard of.
Yeah.
And you realize that all these kids are just so screwed up.
One of my favorite lines from that, though, is when she goes to the public school and she talks to the girl in the hallway. And the girl's like, ah, it's, you know, it's school. And she's like, what's the worst part? She's like, the worst part is you can see our teacher trying to figure out how they wound up here. Like, oh God. Oh yeah. That was so good. And that's so casual. Is it has a bleak viewpoint. It has a bleak viewpoint on human nature, but it's so joyful about its bleakness.
Yeah, you're going to start watching it and you're not immediately going to have a smile on your face. It's going to feel a little crummy, but by the end of the episode, you'll get it and you'll be giggling and their misery will become your joy.
So also we've got Pete from Mad Men in here as the new guy.
Vincent Kartheiser?
Yes, Vincent Kartheiser is in here. He's the guy who bought out Alex's company, and he's more of a serious businessman. Alex is sort of flighty idea guy.
What's he like in another show?
He's still an asshole.
Yeah,
but can he play similar, though?
Not as bad.
No. He's more of a... He's like the likable guy.
Yeah.
Who's secretly a jerk.
He's like an asshole, but who's getting, you know, steady sex, so he's not, like, taking his assholeness out on everybody.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Of course, the steady sex he's getting, we find out, is with Alex's longtime
ex.
Is
that.
And that causes some interesting dynamics. And then over in Valerie's world, we've got Katie Aselton playing her new best bud. I love her from The League.
And she does such a good job playing, like, a woman's best friend.
Yeah.
Like, she's... I mean, I'm not a woman, but I'd love to be best friends with her.
I would also love to be best friends with Katie Aselton.
Or a woman's best enemy friend, like in Togetherness.
Yes. But she's really good here, and they sort of set it up. Like, I wasn't sure if she was actually secretly, like, you know, mean girl getting in with Valerie, but it seems like a legit friendship.
Well, you know, I'm kind of the opposite. In the beginning, it seemed legit, but
now you're starting to think it's a mean girl thing?
Well, maybe some of that will build up because now Valerie's starting to date around in her friend circle.
Oh, yeah.
And we don't know her relationship with these friends yet.
Well, show killer Kyle Bornheimer showed up.
Oh, yeah.
And he's always great. He's been in a lot of dead shows, but he's always great. And him playing the sort of casual guy that Valerie's talking about, I love that. They had such great chemistry.
Yep.
That was really, really good. But the other story is Laura and her new friend, Aubrey.
Ooh.
I love that actress. I think the character playing Aubrey is really good.
Yeah.
And they're doing sort of a...
Like a Demi Lovato song type thing.
Yeah. And also a Me and Earl and the Dying Girl kind of thing with their new cancer patient friend, Spencer.
Oh, yeah.
And the whole thing where Laura thinks that he's in rehab and they're all trying to tell her he's got cancer, that was a really funny, awkward scene. Like, that's the kind of thing Casual does really well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is really good relationship stuff. It's really funny. If you miss Togetherness, and I miss the shit out of Togetherness, this is a good substitute for it.
You need to watch a show called Get Over It-ness.
You get over it, Grant.
I'm glad I deleted that other joke, so now it sounds like I'm just having wins with my jokes.
But yeah, this is really good so far this year.
Wasn't this from the guy who directed like Juno and Thank You for Smoking?
Jason Reitman.
That's right.
Yes. And I love his stuff.
They've got this guy, Xander Liedman.
He is actually, Xander Liedman is the main writer and showrunner.
Oh, okay.
Jason Reitman directs the first two episodes of the season. And he's also sort of one of the, like, the co-creator.
Nice.
But I believe this is mostly in Xander Liedman's hands.
Yeah. No, my favorite thing definitely from the show is, like, the Alex Cole character.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like, especially in the 90s, every show you turned on, there was, like, one kind of cool white guy character who you're like, ooh, I want to be that character on this show.
Yeah.
And it's been a long time. But this Alex Cole character, I'm like, ooh, even though his life's totally miserable,
he's a mess.
I want to be that character. I just want to be that cool guy who's always got a snappy comeback.
Yeah, but his life is a sad spiral of depression.
But aren't they all?
I know the real life version of that guy. Not, you don't want to be him. Well, let's go ahead and move on then to Outcast. This is a new show over on Cinemax or Max. It might be calling itself now. It is the horror thriller show from Robert Kirkman, the guy who did Walking Dead. And this is it's about exorcisms. And it's got Patrick Fugit as Kyle Barnes, this guy. Patrick Fugit, you might recognize as the kid from Almost Famous.
Yeah.
Which, once I finally realized that, I was like, what? That's who he is. But anyway, he's Kyle Barnes, this guy that he encountered an exorcism of his mother when he was a kid and went through some trauma before the demon supposedly left her.
Yeah.
And throughout his life, he's kind of had more demons kind of run into his life. He doesn't know if he's kind of cursed. Turns out he kind of is.
Yeah.
And we follow him kind of teaming up with this Reverend Anderson, played by Philip Glenister. I don't know where else he would be from. Do you recognize the guy? I have an IMDb here. He was in Calendar Girls. That's where you know him. Remember the old ladies that make a naked calendar?
Oh, yeah, Calendar Girls. Yeah,
I'm not going to look at anything else. Yeah, that's what he's from.
That's it. Sure.
Anyway, so they kind of team up to go fight these demons that are in, they have to exorcise them.
They're essentially doing like hillbilly exorcisms.
Yeah. They're out in West Virginia.
Yeah, driving around in a Cutlass Supreme 1992 edition.
It's like if Justified met The Exorcist.
There you go.
It's all kind of trashy out there, but it's not played up like super hick, I guess.
Yeah, it's more played for kind of the realism of it. These look like houses you've driven by, people that you know, like small town type people.
It's super creepy.
Yeah, very creepy. And as the show goes on, you realize there may be more to, you know, this whole idea that you know, this kid is being, you know, constantly approached by these demons. There may be more to this than is on the surface.
Yes, it seems to be spiraling out where who's a demon, who isn't a demon, who's just evil.
Yeah.
Like, and what is Kyle Barnes' relationship? What about, I mean, the idea of introducing demons, I feel like it opens the gateway to having angels exist, and I'm not sure if they are in the background introducing such a concept yet.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, to take a step back, Kyle, what was your introduction to this show?
Oh my gosh. I've got probably the best. If you're a Robert Kirkman fanboy, like Randy is.
I love Robert Kirkman the same way I love Real Rob.
Then this is totally your wet dream come true, because I was at South by Southwest this year.
Yeah.
And I went to see when they showed the pilot there. And Robert Kirkman came out, did a Q&A, and it showed at the same time as the Preacher premiere did. So Preacher had way more folks over there with, you know, going to try to see Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
So not a lot of people for the screening. And then when the Q&A started, the thing almost cleared out. There was probably only 15 of us.
That's kind of nuts.
Yeah.
Given that Walking Dead is the biggest TV show on. No,
and I really believe that. Because everyone I talked to, they said they wanted to see it, but they wanted to see Preacher more.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I'm sitting there afterwards, and you know, they're talking about the comic book, and he asks for a show of hands who's all read the comic, and you know, practically everyone darts their hand up. Then he asks who hasn't read the comic yet, and I dart my hand up, and he hands me a stack, all the current issues and the first two trades. So I'm like, how can I not read this at this point? And sure enough, I'm not gonna lie, probably had a little bit of the conference, the festival mystique on me, because I just fired through those books.
Yeah.
But then seeing the show come on to Cinemax and then getting to watch the episodes, they are doing a really good job with the show.
Adapting it?
Oh yeah.
Is it pretty true to the comic?
You know what I hear? Payola.
Payola?
Payola, Kyle's bought and paid for.
What are you talking about? I technically did get free stuff from him, and he took a picture on my Instagram. That's worth more than all those comics.
That's kind of true. You can't pay for such a... You can.
Well, no. One of my criticisms of the comic is I think that the first trade, it goes a little slow. I think there's interesting aspects to the show, which we've already talked about, and they don't really get to that till the end of the book. Well, for good reason, because they're kind of setting it up. But they definitely get through the material quicker on the show. Like, I think the first season of the show is going to be the first two trades.
I thought it was key in the first episode to introduce a person possessed and then just get right through it and cure them. And that first episode kind of really set the stage for what they're dealing with and that this is going to be an ongoing thing.
Well, and you know, a big aspect of the show, if you haven't seen it, something we haven't talked about yet, is they really... play with the idea of domestic violence, domestic abuse, because you find out in the pilot, the only way this Kyle Barnes character knows how to exorcise these demons is to literally hit these people, like, with his fists. So you can see how that'd be problematic if he was exorcising an 8-year-old boy.
which he does.
Who now has...
He beats up a kid.
A bunch of black guys. Or an old woman.
Who would think that Robert Kirkman would want to encourage violence like that in a show?
So the show gets very real when, you know, these guys are going around telling everyone there's demons, and they're like, there's not demons. You're just beating people up.
You're kind of just punching kids, dude. You need to stop.
So the first 10 seconds of the premiere, I went, whoa, that's the worst thing I've ever seen.
I know what you're talking about.
And
now.
Then it gets about a minute into the episode, and I go, nope. Nope, that's the worst thing I've ever seen. And I don't know if that's a good sign, but I will say that as far as horror shows are concerned, I think a lot of them don't do it well. They do things cheesy. I mean, this one sure does do a bunch of jump scares and stuff like that, but it builds the atmosphere fantastically. I think that the location that they have, like yeah. this West Virginia town and like all the places they go to, Rome, yeah.
Yeah,
it all feels really great. It feels creepy. The cinematography, everything like gives this.
Oh, you know who's directing this?
Like it has this creepiness that hangs over top of everything.
I can't think of his name. But the guy who did that movie, The Guest.
I never saw The Guest.
Oh my gosh, this was another sleeper. Let me get this guy's name real quick. This is another sleeper movie, actually starred one of the characters from Downton Abbey, just playing a totally... Adam Wingard, that's the guy's name.
Oh.
But yeah, no, The Guest is just a story about this. I won't go too long into this. A story about a guy, a family, who one day somebody shows up on their doorstep, and he's like, hi, I served in Iraq with your son. He died and wanted me to come here and just kind of give my condolences. I just wanted to say, you know, sorry, all this. Well, the family ends up taking him in, and you find out there may be more to this guest than meets the eye.
Oy.
And I don't want to spoil the reveal because it is just a really great
he's an alien
movie. I said no.
He's a werewolf.
I'm never telling you guys
why
how movies
both?
End again. Actually, that would be a cool movie. No.
That's how all my stories end.
Yeah. But no, this Adam Wingard guy is really cool. And like you said, the show looks really great. I'm
well, I'm also pretty impressed with the rest of the cast. We have Ren Schmidt, who was in Boardwalk Empire. She was half-faced dude's girlfriend. Julia, I want to say it was her name, something like that.
Yeah.
And she's fantastic as...
Man, amazing.
As Patrick's sister. I mean, she does a lot more of the heavy lifting in the show, I think, than him. We had a great guest appearance from Scott Porter, who's in the show.
Was
Street from Friday Night Lights. Reggie Cathy is the police chief. Brent Spiner, Data himself, is in this show.
Oh. That's a difficult character they have him playing. Like, I'm really curious to see what happens because, especially when the story goes on, his character becomes pretty. What's that? Pretty important.
Pretty intense, I would imagine.
Yeah,
he's at
the front of a lot of stories.
He seems like the big bad. Like they put a face on an actual big bad character here, and have him just kind of creeping around the background right now.
Yeah. I almost might compare him to the angel characters from Preacher. But obviously not a funny version, but he's it almost seems like he's there for the same reason.
Okay.
Like, figure out what this guy's got going on and then stop him.
I mean, you want to go into a little bit of spoiler chat real quick?
Sure.
Okay, I'd hey, love guys, that. we're gonna wrap up this discussion in about like 5 minutes here. So, but we're going to take 5 minute quick spoiler discussion. Jump ahead if you don't want to hear it. But, okay, here's what I want to know. So, Kyle Barnes, he's apparently been possessed by a demon, the same demon that was in his mom, right?
Oh, I don't
or
think
he,
so.
Or he was dead. He was killed by a demon, and then he resurrected?
No, I think... So, total spoilers discussion.
Yeah, yeah.
Kyle Barnes has... I don't know if it's an ability, if it's who he is as a person, but he is the outcast, or he has the outcast. And it appears, especially at the comics and the show...
And the outcast is
It's like his power.
Entity. Oh, it's a power. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's like this power he has, or it's him as a person. In the comics, they haven't really made that reveal yet,
mm-hmm.
But he has this ability, and it appears to be something that he uses to fight these demons, but definitely where they're at in the books now, you find out, no... They actually need him for some reason. Like, the reason that these demons keep coming around him is because without the outcast, they wouldn't live, or they wouldn't be able to live in this plane of, you know, reality, in this non-hell plane or whatever. So, yeah, there's definitely we're going to find out more about what his abilities are, who he is.
I mean, that wouldn't make sense because his mom attacked him and was basically trying to kill him, yeah. It seemed like.
But the idea is that they need the outcast to feed off of in order to stay alive. So, I mean, the mom could have been torturing him as a child because the demon inside her needed that kid around to live. But obviously, they're a demon.
I don't know. I keep thinking about that. And I'm like, okay, we got demons. I wonder if we'll have angels kind of appear because they made a reference to a guardian angel in one of the episodes. And I was like, now you got me thinking about like, oh, they're going to introduce some other whole aspect here of like this unseen war going on.
They definitely could. I got to say where they're at with the comic right now, it gets really fun with the preacher character. What's his name?
Anderson.
Reverend Anderson. It gets really fun because this guy, he's just the ultimate believer in God, even though he's just seeing all this terrible stuff and he's got more terrible stuff ahead of him. But he's just like, no, God's there. God has a plan. And they just take this guy to the point where he's like, all right, if I don't see you right now, like I can't do it.
It very much feels like what they're doing with Preacher.
With Preacher, yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah, you keep thinking that's there, and it's going to push you to your limits, and maybe this is just part of the zeitgeist where all these shows that are exploring religion want to kind of go.
Kind of like when Mall Cop came out, and then Serve and Report came out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Or
it's kind of the same.
Or that movie Night and Day, the spy movie with the girl as the lead, and then Killers came out with Ashton Kutcher, spy movie with the girl in the lead.
Deep Impact, Armageddon, boom, Twister, Tornado. No
boom.
Yeah. All of that. Pepsi, you know, Randy.
I'm just staring at both of you right now.
Well, okay. We both are really enjoying Outcast. Yeah. I'm guessing you are as well.
Yeah, it's good.
I would definitely recommend this to anyone who wants to check out something kind of scary. But speaking of scary, speaking of thrillers, let's talk about our last show of the night, which is the night of
The Dog
over on HBO.
Yeah.
This show, I guess it's a miniseries.
It's a miniseries,
and
yes.
It takes place. The first episode is the night of a crime that occurs. And hey, we're gonna spoil stuff, so
yeah,
spoilerish.
You know, now you know,
but we can't spoil the feeling of actually seeing the story unfold.
No,
that is something very unique.
This is a powerful show, and the first episode called The Beach. You have a shy Pakistani college student, Naz, who spends the night. He tries to go to a party, but ends up running into a mysterious girl and spends a kind of crazy night with her that when he wakes up, she's dead. He tries to run for it. He gets busted by the cops. And that's where we leave off with episode one.
So it is an 8-episode limited series. It is a fictitious case. I wasn't 100% sure on that.
Yeah.
It is fictitious. The thing I found really interesting about this was that everybody, I've seen people saying, oh, well, the kid's so stupid. Why wasn't he doing this? He's a kid.
Yeah, he's in.
And like, there's no point of this show where I wasn't going, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't run. Call the cops right now. Don't go with that girl. What are you doing? Like, there's so many things where you're just like, what are you doing? Don't do this. For God's sake, ask for a lawyer. Don't talk to the cops. What are you doing? But he's a kid. He doesn't know any of that.
It's frustrating, but not in a bad way.
No, it's frustrating in a great way.
Yeah, it's compelling because of how frustrating it is, because you understand where he's coming from. And, you know, he's acting in a way that we're left to assume he's innocent.
Can I point out, we don't know he's innocent.
We don't know. Ooh. But he sure is making a lot of he's being very trusting of a system if he's innocent.
Because we see him, and we've seen he's our point of view character. We've seen how sympathetic he is. He seems like a nice kid.
We've only seen a little bit about him.
But we don't know that much about him. And what we do know is that he went to bed in this girl's apartment. He had been driven to cut her. By her sort of S&M thing.
We've all been there.
Then he had a cocktail of drugs in his
system. He had a cocktail of drugs. And then he wakes up in her house. Like, if someone snuck in and killed her, that person, that's a really diabolical crime.
Here's why he didn't. Okay. He's not coated in blood. That scene, he would be coated in blood.
That's a reasonable point. That's a reasonable point.
Like, his clothes should be dripping of blood. Instead, he has a little bit on his hand from when he touched her.
That's
the knife or whatever.
But the cops will say, well, no.
Why did it take so long for that blood to dry on his hand?
What if he changed his clothes? What if he had a different... I mean, that's what the cops will say. We know those are the clothes he went in.
He could have killed her while he was naked, and then...
Yeah, that's true.
And then went and showered, and then woke up on the table. I don't know.
This is sounding a little M. Night Shyamalan-ish. I'm just saying.
I'm just saying, we
could
don't...
Could have been alien werewolves.
We don't know he didn't do it. But even if he didn't do it, whoever went in, that's an unlikely story. Like, they set us up with that creepy hearse driver looking at him, like, mm-hmm. that's a suspect. But what, he followed them there, waited until they had sex, snuck in while he was asleep,
murdered her because she flicked a cigarette?
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
I feel like they did that with a few characters. They had
the crying Native American.
They had the two guys on the street, and there was the one who was talking shit.
Right.
Then they did a close up on the other guy.
The other guy,
who's just like staring at the house.
Yeah. And he doesn't say that he was with that guy.
Yeah.
So there was something shady about that. And by the way, that actor. Who was with him?
Yeah,
that's what's his name from Oz and from The Wire.
What?
Let me look up his name. Man, it's hard to kind of go through this. Anyway, he's one of the street crew.
He's a notable character to have in there for
I love the actor, and now I'm like, why don't I remember his name?
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead. I'll look it up.
Yeah. The guy they got playing Nas, Riz Ahmed, he's a new guy to me. I've never seen him before, but he really led this thing. And the guy they've got playing Dennis Box, the detective, who I loved.
Yeah.
Bill Camp. I don't know who that guy is either.
Both of them, I feel like I've seen them in supporting stuff before.
Yeah, but this was them taking a prominent role. Their version of the detective, like, he is definitely playing the kid. Like, he's trying to get him to admit to things and all that. But you actually, like, you believe his sympathy. You believe that he's not out to screw this kid and not trying to get him into a... not trying to get him into trouble. He's trying to solve the case.
Bill Camp has been in, like...
A lot of stuff. A
lot of
stuff.
He's got, like 47 credits. Yeah.
But not like... I mean, he was in Manhattan most recently. But I'm looking at it, it's all a lot of... He was in Damages in 2012, but I don't look at this and go, oh, he's that guy.
Yeah, exactly.
But
his performance was he immediately is captivating on the screen.
Yeah, he's really good, and he's playing sort of a schlubby guy, but he's got a lot of charisma.
They're gonna do 9 episodes of this show for some reason. Yeah, I thought they were only gonna do.
I thought it was 8.
Am I looking at the right thing? Oh, never mind. Yeah, sorry. One of these is an unaired pilot. So yeah.
Oh, okay.
For some reason, I was thinking it was only gonna be 3, but
yeah, no, 8 episode show.
Oh man, I don't know if I can handle 8. This
and,
is pretty tense.
Then John Turturro as the lawyer.
Yeah, and we have to wait the entire episode until right at the end.
Yeah.
To get John Turturro, and I was like, there you are.
I needed you.
I
had a couple minor issues with this where I felt like they were pushing the drama a little hard. Some of the stuff where, like, he's almost away, but he gets caught back up at the wrong time. Like, people kept coming in right at the exact right time.
You didn't like that?
And it was pushing things a little bit. It pushed things a little bit too far that every time something was going to go his way, something else worked out differently.
Like, oh, man, I loved it.
But so, did you buy it? Like, I felt the realness of it dropped away a few times.
Yeah. I think I was okay with it because... It's what kept the tension. I mean, it's a story device, but
sure.
It never kind of drew me out of it. What in fact I thought was interesting was that there's so much tension, and maybe this is just for me personally. There's so much tension with him in the police station once he kind of gets picked up that I ended up finding it very comedic. In spite of itself. I don't think that they were going for it, and I don't think that's the intent, and I don't think most people would necessarily find it comedic. But I was just very amused by this idea that these cops, by series of fortunate circumstance, have the very guy that they're looking for sitting right there in their station, and they don't know
it. They almost let him go because nobody was watching him.
Yeah, yeah. And because like they purposely show the lack of communication between like the cops that he got handed off to and everything, and people not having all the information, and so they
and
know.
Not just that, because one of the things I was really struck by in this episode, we talk about them establishing the possible people who killed her, that kind of thing. They also establish the ways he's going to get off in court. Because they show the chain of custody was broken.
Mm-hmm.
They show that whether or not they read him his rights, all this stuff. There's all these little mistakes that were made where even though they have him kind of dead to rights, and a decent lawyer's been able to pick him apart, and they set all that up.
Yeah, this show, so the advertising for this show, we kind of knew it's a kid If anyone's going into this cold, it might be a little bit of a different experience. But if you saw the advertisement before, you know that a kid's picked up for a crime. And he's sitting there like being interviewed about the crime. So that was kind of the setup. So I knew for the entire first half, which the first half is the setup of what the crime was, that I had that entire tension because of that. So it's not like I was watching this like night of like crazy partying and thinking, oh, it's going to be a fun thing like the movie Go or something where he's going to have a wild night of drugs and then, you know, he's just going to graduate the next day or whatever.
But that is a point I wanted to make.
Yeah.
Because again, a lot of people were like, what's this stupid kid doing? But if this was Go,
mm-hmm.
then his decision to go with this hot girl to her apartment and have crazy sex, that's a funny story.
It's awesome, right?
It doesn't turn into a murder. Like it's only because we know the context that it's got that creepy tense element to
it. And that works so much in their favor.
Yeah.
That's like where you give a little bit of a spoiler to where the show's going and that pays off for what your intent is.
So can I give a couple of credits for the creators here?
No.
Steven Zellian. See, I just ignore what Grant says. He is a writer and producer known for Schindler's List, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and American Gangster. That is one of the creators. The other creator is Richard Price. Who is known for IMDb is slow. That's what he's known for. He's known for Clockers, Ransom, and Freedomland, which not quite the same pedigree. Oh, but he did write several episodes of The Wire.
Ah.
So yeah, that's a pretty good pedigree.
Yeah. The guy I was trying to think of that got picked up and he pointed out Naz to us.
Yeah.
J.D. Williams. He was Bodie from from The Wire. He was also in Oz.
Okay.
And speaking of Oz alumni that are going to be popping up in this show, Michael K. Williams is going to be in this at some point.
Oh, man.
Awesome. So, here's the other thing I was thinking about. I mean, yes, this show, with all of its details, you're constantly, in a way, you're sort of like being a detective. It's tapping into that same thing that Serial did so much for us, that
Making a murderer.
Yeah, watching these kind of crime procedurals, and this one is fictional, but at the same time, they do all these clues, and it's like making mental notes. Oh, did you see how they said this? That's going to be inadmissible. Or, oh, did you notice how this witness claimed that he was all by himself? That's because the other guy's a potential suspect. Oh, did you see how she left that door open? That allows someone else to go into the house, whatever, all this kind of stuff. It's like they leave all these clues, and that's so fascinating to watch from the perspective of someone that's trying to be a little junior detective, I guess.
Well, I mean, this is a great follow-up to Serial. Remember when Serial came out and they had the Jinx?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, oh, this is their follow-up. This clearly is this is their follow-up to Serial.
Yeah.
People who like Serial will love this episode with
Jinx
show.
Was fantastic too in its own right as far as going like a real route examination of a crime, but this is the fictional version that I so wanted.
I also think this is the natural follow-up to True Detective.
Mm.
Not True Detective Season 2. If True Detective Season 1 had been followed up with this, we would have been like, oh, HBO, they're geniuses.
They could have called this True Detective, and we'd have been like, yeah.
Yeah.
So the other thing I was thinking about with this show is I wish I would have held off on watching the first episode so I had two to watch back-to-back. Like, it was that good and that compelling. Yeah. And where it leaves off at the end of the first episode is where I want to see. I want to see the investigation. I want to see the interview and like what he ends up saying about what he remembers, what other evidence they're able to gather, all of that. That whole process, I love that stuff. And so it's such a tease for me.
Yeah, I agree.
You know what I could see them doing is making this entire show not about the crime or about what happened, but about just the process of what happens after you're taken in.
Mm.
You know what? I mean, because if we were watching week to week and they don't mention it, we're going to be coming back each week. Like, what about the girl? What about the knife? You know, what happened? And, it could be just more of a show about being on the inside.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I'm looking at HBO's About page, and it says, the series follows the police investigation and legal proceedings, all the while examining the criminal justice system and the purgatory of Rikers Island, where the accused awaits his trial. So it sounds like that's the direction they're going. Like, we're going to see what it's like to be processed through. I mean, the whole thing where, like, they take all his clothes and they put him in the jailhouse clothes and all that kind of stuff. Just, we haven't seen processing like that, I don't think, on a show before.
Yeah. Well, the scene where, you know, Grant's laughing, but where he's sitting in the police station kind of waiting for what's going to happen next. I remember being 14 years old, getting brought in for, like, doing
murdering a girl.
Stupid stuff on my skateboard, murdering girls, you know.
The skateboard.
Skateboarder kids. But, you know, you're sitting there looking at all these other people in the police station, looking at the cop, thinking about, is he calling my mom right now? Like, is my life about to be over?
Yeah.
Like, oh, gosh.
It's over.
Wait, they captured it.
The other thing that was getting to me the whole time, and this is a weird thing, it was in my head, but the whole thing that he had stolen his dad's cab. Like, he had already done something really bad. And if he'd only been caught for that, he was fucked. But now he killed a girl. Like, his parents...
It changes your perspective.
Yeah.
Taking that cab wasn't so bad at all, really.
But, I mean, the thing is, what that's going to do is it's going to create doubt. Because his parents are like, our boy would never do this. And they're like, well, has he ever stolen your cab before?
Oh, man.
So it creates a doubt. Like, we didn't know our son the way we thought we did.
Yeah.
Has he ever done drugs before?
Yeah.
He did a bunch.
Yeah, so that's the thing. There's a lot of stuff that his parents, who are his best defense, can't be his alibi.
Have you ever stabbed a girl? Well, I stabbed her, but I didn't stab her a bunch.
Yeah.
I'm rewatching Game of Thrones right now, and this reminds me of Tyrion's trial at the end of season 4, where they're like, but you lay with whores all the time, and you do all this. And he's like, yeah, but that doesn't mean I killed somebody. Like, a lot of people do that and don't kill people.
Oh, man. I can't recommend this enough. This one just, like, I watched this with my daughter, my little baby, on my lap the whole time. And I was like, this is so tense. And, I mean, luckily there's only, like, one violent scene.
Yeah.
And the rest is just tension. Yeah. It's just how they construct scenes. And it was so good. All the characters, I was just really invested.
Grant, I'd just like to point out, you just described... You were watching this with your baby girl on your knee, laughing like a madman. This does not look good for you, Grant.
Is this the night of for me?
This is the night of for you.
Am I on trial?
Years later, you're going to wake up in the middle of the night, screaming child. Like, where did you come up with all this stuff? Like, you had a nightmare about getting picked up in a cab and, like, I stabbed a girl. And
what?
You got one active imagination.
But, yeah, I think it's early, but I'm going to say this is the show of the summer.
Yeah.
This is the show everybody should be watching. Mr. Robot's coming back next week, and everybody should be excited about that, but this is the new show of the summer.
The new one. Yeah. That's an important keyword there. Well, I guess with that, let's go ahead and wrap it up. Kyle, thanks for joining us, man.
Thank you, guys. This is a blast.
Is there anywhere that people could follow you?
You know, I'm Mr. Kyle Scott on Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah.
Don't go looking for my Facebook. Actually, if you're into design or design type stuff, I'm on Dribbble as Mr. Kyle Scott, or I have a pretty elaborate Pinterest page with a lot of design-related pins. So, yeah, all Mr. Kyle Scott on all those.
Right on. Yeah. Well, we're going to go ahead and take a break. But if you guys need more TV Dudes discussion, you guys go ahead and head on over to Patreon, because we're going to fire back up our recording devices and we're going to discuss some Pokemon Go over there. That is patreon.com/TV Dudes. And we appreciate all the support we get over there. We appreciate all of you listeners as well. And we want to thank you guys for tuning in this week. Until next week.
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast. It is exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and on Twitter at TV Dudes, and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.